You're listening to 2A Radio with Bill Carnes.
Some people do say that I have a touch too much, maybe come on a little bit too strong. But anyhow, you are tuned in to the Second Amendment Radio Show. We like to shorten that down to 2A Radio. As far as I can tell, it is the only Monday through Friday daily nationally syndicated radio show dedicated to the Second Amendment. Now, of course, we talk about all kinds of stuff, be it Second Amendment rights, First Amendment rights, Fifth Amendment rights, states' Tenth Amendment rights, and how the government is getting bigger, badder, bolder, and just trying to hose us out of everything. You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. RepublicBroadcasting.org is the website. All kinds of great stuff there. Archives are available on the RBN sites, $1.33 a month. However, RBN is also standing up a second network, the Elected Radio Network, Elected Representatives Network, ERN. If anybody is interested in helping to get that off, that's all self-funded. You can donate a little bit more than the $1.33 a month, $5, $10, $20, whatever it may be. You can go to republicbroadcasting.org and check that out. We also, if you'd like to spread the message, we have generic business cards for RBN. For 100 cards, they're $10. They're full color. They're in a nice glossy finish. They're very nice. I come from a printing background, and I can tell you these are nice cards. They're not junk. They're not some laser printer card that comes off. They're very nice things. If you order those, you can also get an RBN bumper sticker and a free copy of Aaron Russo's America from Freedom to Fascism, which, if you have not seen, is an eye-opener. It is fantastic. So, to order all those things, you can call the regular business office, which is 800-724-2719, or you can mail in to Republic Broadcasting at 2251 Double Creek Boulevard, Suite 302. That's Round Rock, Texas, 78664. And if at any time you'd like to call into the show, the call-in number is 800-313-9443. That's how to get a hold of me right here live. So, with all of that being said, we do have a couple of show sponsors I would like to get to. First of all, you can go to BillCarnes.com. That is all about me. I am the host of the show. I was on the first series of History Channel's Top Shot, which is a shooting-based reality competition show of sorts. I was on season one with 15 other fantastic people. You can, also on there, I have my NFA tab. It says NFA Guns with a question mark. You can click on that. I put together Class 3 NFA Trusts. And that is if you'd like to own any sort of NFA items, the National Firearms Act, be it machine guns, submachine guns, suppressors, explosive devices, destructive devices, I think they're called, and then the AOW, any other weapons. You can own those personally, or you can form a corporation, or the most leeway and the quickest way of getting about it, and the least expensive, is by far, by going through with the NFA Trust. I set those up individually for everybody. Additionally, one of our sponsors is RoninTactical.com. Now, Ronin Tactical features high-end defensive tactics types firearms instructors. And what they do is they're also certified in many of the states to teach concealed weapons permits. So what happens is you get together a group, you get a hold of RoninTactical.com, R-O-N-I-N, they send out one of their certified instructors, and you sit down and you go through the concealed weapons permits, which will get you about 30-plus states between the concealed weapons permits that you'll get wherever you live. It doesn't matter. So they will send folks out to get you set up with that. So go to RoninTactical.com. You can also go to my website, BillCarnes.com, and the show website, 2aradio.com. I have all of my archives there and information about me on both sites. So there you go. Stay tuned, folks. You're tuned in live right here with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Thank you for that round of applause. I greatly appreciate it. Now, in California, as we've said many times on the show, the only way to open carry in California without getting some sort of specialized permission is to carry a handgun unloaded, exposed. Now, you can carry ammunition with you, say in a magazine pouch if it's a semi-auto, or speed loaders if it's a revolver. You better practice a lot if you're going to carry an empty revolver and try to load it with speed loaders and then be able to use it in any sort of instantaneous defense. However, I digress. There was a group of folks from the South Bay Open Carry organization who had carried at a Manhattan Beach fair in the LA area about, I guess this is working on nearly 2 weeks ago. So here's a little story on it. It said bigotry against gun owners on display at a street fair. It says, Now, we are not here to debate their Second Amendment rights, says the lead singer of a band, Thin Ice. The guy's name is Russ Lesser, as he announced on his Manhattan Beach hometown fair audience. He says, however, we are here to exercise our First Amendment rights of free speech to ridicule this group for incredibly bad taste and stupidity. Okay. And of course, you got a bunch of lefts. Oh, yeah, man. Drop acid and be high. We're behind you, dude. No guns. Something like that. So, who were they ridiculing? Again, members of the South Bay Open Carry, a group that promotes the right to carry handguns openly in compliance with California law. Some, not used to seeing people who were exercising even a bit of freedom in this regard, reacted as total bigots, as they normally do, when confronted with the idea that would otherwise intrude on someone else's, their own leftist, provincial biases, with hostility, ignorance, and, of course, a bit of arrogance as well. And we always see a bunch of name-calling. Weighing in on the first count, Lesser's narrow-mindedness was particularly telling, especially considering its influence in the beach community and beyond. In addition to being a popular local band, he is also a longtime Manhattan Beach councilman and former mayor and president of Body Glove International. A fellow band and family member is a U.S. attorney, someone who presumably took an oath as a condition to assuming power. So, naturally, they abused their leadership positions and the advantage of a stage to gin up hostility and intolerance. Lesser was right, though. They were not there to debate. They were there to insult, to resort to the childish tactics of questioning the manhood of open carriers, and to chastise them to get a life, in a song written especially to attack the gun rights advocates. In other words, these community leaders who were up on stage were there to stir up crowd ugliness against a minority that they disapprove of. Representing the shallow knee-jerk fear reaction was resident Elsa Gerard, who stated she would not attend the fair. I didn't want my children there, said Gerard, who stayed home with her teenage son and 12-year-old twins on Saturday. I felt very uncomfortable with someone who's not a trained police officer in a public place with a weapon. People are under such a false idea that police are gunslingers. They're trained, high-end, highly tactical, Navy SEAL type, tier one group, just SWAT cat-minded gunslingers. Nothing could be further from the truth. Nothing. You will probably get the likes of, some of the anti-gunners in D.C. Let's see, Pelosi and Schumer and folks like that that would actually vote for pro-gun legislation before you're going to see cops across the country into some sort of a SWAT cop tier one group gunslinging tactical madman. You know, it just doesn't work out. Now, it's interesting that this band of scumbags up on stage that were up there that sang a song against a minority of people who were carrying guns, if they had gotten up there and sung a song about being anti-Mexican or anti-black or hating Jews or Christians suck, they're the worst. Could you imagine if they got up there and did something like that? Well, that would be their freedom of speech, but it would be a bit of hate speech against one particular group. What is the difference if a group is there exercising their Second Amendment right? If they were up there singing an anti-religion song and people were there displaying the Star of David or the crucifix or some particularly colorful turban, whatever it might be, a symbol of Buddha, whatever it could be, whatever their religion is, and a band gets up there and, through song, attacks them, does that pass First Amendment constitutional muster? Probably not. It may. In some areas, it's actually one of these things that's pretty interesting. It depends on the constitutional mindedness of the judiciary reviewing such a case. It's right on the ragged edge. But since these guys were seeing against folks exercising their Second Amendment right, not their First Amendment right, which in this case, the band would have been doing their First Amendment right by singing the stupid song. And had it been against someone else exercising their alternate First Amendment right, that freedom of religion, we would have had some trouble. But since, no, these guys are exercising their Second Amendment right, the scumbags up on stage were allowed to chastise them and try to stir up crowd ugliness against them. Well, back to Elsa Gerard. She said, in Elsa's world, a person with a gun and no badge is automatically some sort of homicidal threat, a murderer waiting to happen, if you will. Too bad the reporter didn't follow up and ask her what she actually knows about how trained everyone in uniform really is, or more appropriately, is not. Too bad as well that the reporter didn't ask her what she knows about the Second Amendment and the Bill of Rights. Additionally, too bad the reporter didn't ask her what she knows about the overwhelmingly peaceable conduct of armed citizens who knew more about the founder's intent than apparently she does and most people in state legislatures and even carrying a badge do. And God forbid she actually expanded her horizons and maybe talked to an open carrier and test her baseless preconceptions. Oh, we couldn't do that. I have my mind. I see somebody walking down the street or in a grocery store or anywhere out in society with a gun, and they're not in uniform with a badge of some kind, be it police or security. Well, then obviously that gun is about to turn that person into a homicidal maniac, because only those trained with some form of badge are somehow, they have some sort of a force field protecting them from the homicidal tendencies one gets when a gun is close at hand. Now, Elsa and those like her are one of the reasons that folks maintain the only ones flies, not that many would ever look to be, receptive or persuasive. The only one that flies would be the perception of who should actually have a gun. And that's somebody in a uniform with a badge. But then, what is bigotry rooted in, if not totally blind ignorance? And if then there's a third pillar in support of the hoplophobia, again, that is Jeff Cooper's term for people scared of guns or those with guns, the official arrogance is exemplified by this Manhattan Beach police officer, Rod Ueda, U-Y-E-D-A. What he does not say is in which venue he thinks it would be appropriate as far as respecting the right to keep and bear arms. Ask him if he's approved a concealed carry permit for any law-abiding Manhattan Beach citizen who applies for one. Ask him if he'll do it if he catches someone with a gun who couldn't get a permit to save his life. Then ask him if he'll acknowledge a legal duty with any sort of attendant liability to protect individuals who need his official rejection of their rights to go unarmed. Yet again, what we have is, we must, in California, ask the chief law enforcement officer, be it police chief or sheriff, permission to carry a gun. If they say no, realize they have no absolute legal responsibility to have to provide protection to any individual citizen. They can tell you, no, you can't carry a gun, but on the flip side, Supreme Court says, we don't have to protect you either. Interesting. So all of this going on in California, the be happy, drop acid, eat mushrooms, and smoke weed society of the left coast of the United States. Thank God it's generally concise around the water at the Pacific Ocean where we get this mentality. The inland areas of California generally are much more conservative and much more level-headed. Stay tuned, folks. There's more to come. You're listening to Bill Carnes live right here on 2A Radio. RoninTactical.com has certified concealed carry training specialists that travel to you and your group of self-protection advocates. Organize a group of friends, family, or co-workers who take their responsibility of self-protection seriously, and RoninTactical.com will send out a certified training specialist who will provide a course of instruction that will get you and your group certified to carry concealed in over 30 states while providing you, the organizer, a commission for organizing the event. Do you travel for work, family, or vacation and want to remain armed and safe when traveling? Contact RoninTactical.com for details on staying home and having one of our certified professionals travel to you to provide the training and credentials for you and your group to safely and legally carry concealed in over 30 states. Call 888-416-4809 or go online to RoninTactical.com.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Well, of course, it is election season. It is upon us. So people take really just take all of the rules out and just start throwing things around. So something interesting has happened up in Janesville, Wisconsin, where the sheriff's candidate for Rock County, Wisconsin, a guy by the name of Gary Keller, G-A-R-Y-K-E-L-L-E-R, this last Thursday called the deputies of the Rock County Sheriff's Department's brown shirts, which, if you understand history, it's a reference to Adolf Hitler's the Nazi stormtroopers that he had. He says, anybody that knows anything about history knows what I mean there, Keller said. People won't talk to them. They just don't have the confidence that they can talk to them and anything is going to be done about it. Now, he's talking about speaking to any of the deputies, any of the brown shirt deputies, as he would refer to them, of Rock County, Wisconsin. Now, Keller's comments came during a forum at the Hedberg Public Library, and incumbent sheriff candidate Bob Spoden immediately fired back. This is what he had to say. He says, I found that a little distasteful that you're referring to our deputies as brown shirts. And I can tell you that the men and women of the sheriff's office are dedicated and work very hard for our community. They care about our community and they work many hours of overtime. Their parents, their moms and dads. And to say that they're brown shirts, I think, is not appropriate. So, although the comment itself was very strong, the retort, in my mind, from incumbent sheriff was pretty weak. Now, Spoden, a Democrat, and Keller, a Republican, participated in the forum hosted by the League of Women Voters in Janesville, Wisconsin. The two will face off in the November election. Keller also challenged Spodin in 2006, running as an independent in that race. Spodin has been sheriff since 2006. Keller is a former Broadhead police officer. Now, this is one thing that actually is rather interesting to me, that the sheriff's race is a partisan election. That makes no sense to me, that somebody who is a cop is in a partisan election. That just, you enforce the laws. You don't interpret the laws, and you don't adjudicate the laws. You enforce the laws. Now, interpretation of the laws and adjudication of the laws come in the form of, after someone's arrested, deciding whether or not to charge them at the district attorney's level, and certainly how they're adjudicated at the judicial level. Those are both traditionally nonpartisan races. A sheriff's race that is partisan, I don't know if anybody really cares if they're being arrested by a Democrat or a Republican, if they're a bad guy or gal. I don't want to be sexist in that term. If they're being arrested, I don't think they really care. Well, Keller said the sheriff and his top paid staff members should take a 15% pay cut. He said they need to show people that they're serious about cutting the budget. Spodin said he has saved the county millions of dollars. He said alternative programs have been reduced. The jail's building needs from a $56 million new jail to a $5 million renovation project. Keller also said that his priorities are saving money and reducing the budget. Spodin says his priorities are drug enforcement, managing the budget, fighting underage drinking, and managing the jail population. All right. Well, everybody looks at the job a little bit differently. Spodin said that the jail should be for people who scare us, not for people who are responsible. He said low-risk offenders should be released to save money. Keller said many inmates with work release privileges should be allowed to stay at home. He said if they violate conditions of their release, they could be locked up. So he said, the other guy said, it's a tit-for-tat issue here. Spodin said that he supports the Second Amendment and gun rights. He said his office would enforce the law regarding concealed carry weapons, which is illegal in Wisconsin. Keller said he's the only pro-gun candidate. He said the sheriff's office doesn't have to enforce the concealed carry law because it's unconstitutional. He said his priority would be to uphold the Constitution. Now, I got to dig that. In my own county of Nye, a few years back, the town of Pahrump, now keep in mind it is not a city, it is a town. It was the township was created by the county commission. And the town board passed a resolution which got national attention about 4 or 5 years ago that said English is the only official language in the town of Pahrump. Kind of neat. But the sheriff said, I can't enforce that. First of all, it is civil. And even then, to force somebody into something, it won't pass constitutional muster in his eyes, which means that the sheriff believes that he would be in violation of constitutional rights if he were to enforce a law that he deemed to be unconstitutional. Now, is it really the sheriff's position to do that? No, but at the same time, they incur liabilities enforcing an unconstitutional law. So I think this guy Keller is on par with that. Who knows? Maybe they are brown shirts up there. I don't know. I've never been to Wisconsin. Certainly not to that county in Wisconsin, whatever the name of it is. I forget. Rock something? Sorry, guys. Rock County. Anyhow, we've got more to come. So stay tuned. We're going to hear about the ATF lies and the blindfold that the federal government is putting on us dealing with guns in Mexico after the break. Stay tuned.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio are back.
All right, guys, a recurring topic here on 2A Radio. And again, you can always go to 2aradio.com and hear the archives, read about what's going on, things such as that. Is the issue of Mexico claiming that guns used in their ongoing battle, generally in the northern part of Mexico along the southern border with the U.S. southern border with Mexico. Of course, that's Mexico's northern border. Their ongoing gun violence and explosive violence and murder rate with the Mexican drug cartels in those areas of northern Mexico, which are allegedly providing all kinds of drugs to the U.S. I can only see this as getting a little bit worse if California does pass their a law which is in front of their state legislature right now, which would allow for recreational use of marijuana, not just the medical use. And there's pot dispensaries all over the state of California. What it takes to get a medical marijuana card there is basically go to the doctor and ask for it, for the most part. Anyhow, I digress. Mexico is claiming that over 80% of all of the guns seized from Mexican crime syndicates come from the United States. It's absolutely not true. Not even close. We debunked this nearly 18, 20 months ago. It was in 2009 we debunked this, the spring of 2009. So the question is, why would Mexico lie? They're being told to. Well, who's telling the chief Mexican, Felipe Calderon, to lie about this? It's called the Obama regime. Here's the deal. The United States gives billions of dollars a year to Mexico. That's our money. And the United States gives away between millions and billions a year to all sorts of foreign countries. Now, we can't manage our own finances, but we're basically borrowing money from the Federal Reserve and sending it overseas or to other countries. Now, in the case of Mexico, here's what it is. Look, we told these guys during the campaign, we're not going to come after their handguns, shotguns, right? We're not going to come after their guns. So to go back on that real biggie directly and actually say, look, we want to go back on your guns. We want to take them away or you know, something like that. We can't rightfully get up and just do it. I mean, we could do it, but it wouldn't look good. So here's what we want to do. We want your help. We need to have a reason there, Señor Calderon. We need to have a reason to go after the guns. So what we're going to use this whole thing. The U.S. is buying all kinds of dope from Mexico, and we've basically opened the border. I mean, we've got all these Mexicans running across the Arizona desert and through Texas and New Mexico, California as well, and we're not really doing much about it. We put on a decent show, makes it look like we're deporting a bunch, but we're letting your guys in. And a lot of them are criminals, and we're allowing that. Plus, we're giving you billions of dollars a year. So here's the deal. If you want to keep that border open, which, you know, now we're taking the financial burden of all the people sneaking across, and we're giving you billions of dollars on top of that. So you have less people to have to deal with, and you're getting more money for the people that are still there. If you want to continue that, come here, Señor Calderon. We need your help. What you're going to do is this. You're going to claim that 90%, we're going to call it a good number, 90% of all of the crime guns seized in Mexico originate in the U.S. That's what you're going to claim.
Oh, see, Mr. President, but that is not true. He goes, truth is in the numbers. All right?
So here's what we're going to do. You're going to collect up all the different guns that you seize. We're going to let you know what to look for, whether or not it came from the United States, whether it was manufactured in the United States. So these are the things to look for from the different gun manufacturers. If you have any questions, we're going to give you a group of ATF guys. They can help you sort through this. Then what you're going to do is you're going to take pictures of those guns that you've already separated out, and you're going to then turn them over to ATF for tracing. And the ATF is going to trace virtually all of them back to the U.S. And that's what we're going to use. Those are the only guns we're going to show. Those are the only guns you're going to talk about. Those are the only guns you're going to get traced back. So we're going to call it 90%. Then what we can do is we're going to make the assumption, we're going to leave it into the minds of Americans that those guns are coming from gun shops that are in states that border your country. That's the allegation we're going to lead people to believe. So then what we can do is pass some sort of legislation restricting the ability to own guns, have guns, purchase guns, keep guns, shoot guns. We can pass all kinds of legislation based on that for the good of our neighbor, Mexico, and you, Señor Calderon.
Oh, see, Mr. President, we are a corrupt nation. You want to bring me in a couple of cases of, I have tequila here, so maybe some Tennessee whiskey or Kentucky bourbon, along with the billions of dollars. You got yourself a deal, man. Man, you got yourself a deal, Obama.
So that's really what we're dealing with. Now, the ATF is supposed to actually tell us what these percentages are. Well, what these anti-gun folks who like to throw this 90% in our face studiously avoid discussing is what percentage of the seized guns actually are traced. That, of course, is a rather critical bit of information that's being completely withheld, particularly given the fact that a year and a half ago, when the U.S. gun dealers were supposedly supplying 90% of the traced Mexican crime guns, only about 25% of the guns seized were being traced. And that was according to Senator John Kerry, who certainly won't be accused of doctoring figures for the sake of the gun lobby. So, there is a... When we're talking about the 25% of the guns that are seized, what about that are actually being traced? What about the other 75%? They're obviously not getting sent to the ATF because they're obviously not from the U.S. The other 25%, 1 in 4 of these guns come from the U.S. Now, that's not just a high percentage, it's a high actual number. So where are they actually coming from? Well, they're coming from the sales of Department of, the State Department. The State Department approved sales. When one country or one organization within a country, be it a state in Mexico or, you know, any other country, wants to buy guns, ammo, rocket launchers, RPGs, grenades, explosives, full auto guns, all kinds of stuff. They want to buy it from the U.S. They fill out this form and they apply to the U.S. Department of State. State Department looks at it and approves it or denies it or modifies it however they would like. Generally, it's just an approval process. Then they send the order out to the various manufacturers to be filled. Then the State Department oversees the shipping, transportation of all of this guns and all of the ammo to the purchaser. And the purchaser has to fill out what is called an end user certificate, saying to the U.S. Department of State, you know, yeah, here are the end users, this is what we're going to use it for, military or police or whatever it is. What they're not going to do is put down, well, we're actually going to take all these guns and we're going to backdoor them over to some drug cartels. As soon as we get them, we're going to offload everything at the docks and send all the shipping containers filled with all this stuff over to some drug cartels via a corrupt system that we're doing here. It's signed yours truly, you know, whomever in Mexico in this case. Felipe Calderon, let's just say, is a name to throw out there. No reference to the president, but Felipe Calderon, Jimenez Sanchez. So they're not going to fill that. They're going to say, oh, yeah, this is for legitimate uses. The State Department says, okay, here you go. End-use certificate's good. Everything's good. We're going to ship this stuff off. And the State Department brokers the deal. They literally broker the deal. Once the guns and ammo and everything else they ordered arrive at the home port of the purchaser, in this case, we're discussing Mexico. So once it arrives at some Mexican port, it is out of the hands of the United States. If the end user certificate was falsified, which the State Department estimates that 24% of all end user certificates are falsified, dramatically so from the end user certificates of the State Department approved purchases in South America. So that's, they believe that, and what's the State Department going to do? We don't have any authority on for any sort of enforcement of this on foreign land. But the State Department, knowing that this stuff goes on, they still broker the deal because they make some money in it. State Department makes a piece of the action. So when they know all of this and they say, okay, well, now 90% of these guns are traced to the United States, although it's only from the 90% of the 1 in 4 of the guns, the 25% that we actually had traced. We know that 75% of these guns are not from America. These 25%, we either know that are or probably are. So those are the ones that we're going to trace. So 90% of the 25% actually come from the U.S. Okay. Sounds good. What they're not telling you is that 90% of that 90% of the 25%, follow that along, 25% of the guns in Mexico are traced. Of those 25%, 90% of those come from the U.S. Of that 90%, 90% of those come through these brokered State Department deals. And, of course, the ATF is doing what they're ordered to do from who? Who is over the ATF? Who are their bosses? It's called the Oval Office. And that would go directly through the Justice Department. Who's the chief of the Justice Department? That would be the Attorney General. Who's our Attorney General? That scumbag named Eric Holder. The same guy that refused to offer any form of prosecution whatsoever to the new Black Panthers who are doing voter intimidation against white voters in the last election cycle. Blatant, complete violation of many laws, and the Black Eric Holder, who works for the Black or half-Black Obama, said, no, we're not going to prosecute the Black Panthers. It's a brotherhood. Right up, yo. Or whatever it might have been. Same guys are now in cohorts with Mexico, Felipe Calderon, all on a business deal. Money for them, drugs for us. Now, here's the interesting thing. Money, drugs, and guns. It sounds like a whole bunch of criminal enterprise. But what we've got is we've got drugs being produced in Mexico by the drug cartels. The guns being provided to them through the corrupt government, through all of the falsified end user certificates, through the direct State Department sales of guns and ammunition, on top of the other 75% of the guns that are in the hands of the cartels that come through the corrupt process in Mexico from other parts of the world. So the Mexican corruption provides the guns. The drugs are produced by the cartels. The money is provided by the United States to buy the guns. What we do is we provide Mexico the money for them. They buy the guns. We get some of that money back. They get the guns. And then also, we end up providing an avenue for the drugs to come into the U.S. So we got money, guns, and drugs. That is all about being a cartel. And it's being perpetrated by two governments. The government of the United States, our federal government, and the federal government of Mexico. So we now have two governmental gun and drug cartels that are not just doing guns, drugs, and money laundering back and forth. It's also conspiracy. That's your government and the government of our southern neighbor. They're in conspiracy dealing with money, guns, and drugs within the government and the cartels in Mexico, which are within the government because it's all corrupt. So, that's what we're dealing with. That is what we have right in front of our face. That is what's going on. And we have the federal side here with the ATF being completely useless when we're talking about what are the actual numbers of guns seized in Mexico and what percent of those are actually traced to the United States and how many of those actually come from gun stores and how many come from the State Department sales. It is all a conspiracy. It is all it's all in cohorts, guys. It's the government of the United States, the federal government, and the federal government of the Mexican federales all working together, saying, see, we are going to screw the Americans. And in the process of screwing the Americans, we're going to try to get their guns. So, if that's a country you want to live in, keep voting the same people in office. Otherwise, we've got to fix this! Stay tuned. More to come after the break. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on!
Okay, so why can't the ATF get useful information from the Mexican government, which has made clear, after all, that it wants U.S. gun laws made much more strict because they're in cohorts with the federal government to try to do that? One would think that this would be a superb incentive to give the gun haters north of the border the information that they need to bolster their argument for more draconian gun laws. Now, this is especially puzzling given the fact that Mexico was provided with the ATF's e-trace system 3 years ago, and the over $1 billion in aid we're sending to Mexico on a regular basis, specifically earmarked for fighting the cartels. Now, there's an article that then tries to make excuses for that. It took over 2 years to translate the program into Spanish. And in all this time, only a dozen Mexican law enforcement agents have been trained to use it. Something tells me there's over a dozen law enforcement agents in Mexico that actually spoke English and didn't need the 2 years of translation. If the tracing is expected to be of any help, why hasn't it been pursued a bit more aggressively? And in fact, it turns out that a recent figure for the percentage of seized guns traced by ATF has recently been made available, and it's not too impressive. The report states that only 30% of the trace requests submitted by Mexico to the ATF are successful. Keep in mind that even that is not the percentage of seized guns, but the percentage of those submitted to the ATF for tracing. If it said Indonesia on it, they're not going to trace it. If it says China, they're not going to trace it. If it says Russia or Israel or India on the gun, they're not going to trace it. Now, we're still not being told what portions of the seized guns are not submitted to the ATF at all. But if, in the high likelihood, the highly unlikely event that all the seized guns are submitted to ATF and 80% of those successfully traced really do come from the U.S., we've only accounted for about 24% of the guns. And, of course, these guns from the U.S. would also include those which have come mainly from the sales brokered by the U.S. Department of State. So, what do we take home from all of this rant? Whenever the federal government opens their mouths, especially about guns, they're lying. And they have an ulterior motive. That is what we can take home. Guys, thanks for tuning in today. You can always send me email to bill@2aradio.com.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill@2aradio.com. I will